Hello and welcome to the Becoming Podcast. I am your host, Anne Fancy, and I am really, really grateful you're here. This podcast is a place where deep, raw, and vulnerable conversation is commonplace. We're here to help illuminate the collective consciousness, to get really thinking deeply about how we live and whether or not that is in alignment with who we are, with our soul's deepest intent and highest path. I hope these conversations stir you to contemplate your own life, to help you step forward into a braver and brighter version of you. And I hope that you can see and hear that this is not always an easy, light-filled, or direct path, but often it's winding, and the shadows and challenges that we face allow us not only to build strength, but to help us really, truly forge ahead into the highest and best path for you. Again, I'm just so grateful you are here. And if you are enjoying this podcast, I would so appreciate that you rate it and subscribe. And of course, share it with others who you think would resonate with what we talk about in this space. If you're looking to join me in conversation and be part of a community, I did start a Facebook group called the Becoming Community, and I'd love to have you in there and keep these conversations going in a different forum. Thank you again for listening and sharing and subscribing. Hello, lovely people. Before we get going on today's episode, which I recorded with Amanda Mossing, she is a fascinating person who shares her story of recovery after addiction and how her spiritual life unraveled in the decade that followed. She is a light worker, a Reiki master, I believe, or a Reiki worker, a yoga teacher, a therapist, and much, much more. And I think you're going to really enjoy hearing what she has to say and hearing her story. Before we get going to that, I do want to tell you a couple quick announcements of things going on. I will hash them out in detail at the end of this episode. So if you want to know more, you can always go to my website, follow me on Facebook or social media, and learn what's happening. But for local people in Michigan, this Saturday, January 11th, 1-11, at 10 a.m., I'm teaching a special yoga class at Urban Rest Brewery in Ferndale, Michigan at 10 a.m. It's called Class in a Glass. So class is going to consist of yoga, a little meditation, and followed up with either beer or kombucha, your choice. And then a few friends and I are doing a little wellness expo in one of the adjoining rooms. So if you want to sniff some oils, learn about wellness, look at some crystal bracelets and earrings and things, we will be there. Okay, what else? I am teaching an extended Ashtanga workshop at Citizen Yoga at the end of the month. I am co-hosting a retreat in the beautiful land of Costa Rica, Nosara, Costa Rica, with my dear friend Lauren Ladani. I am so geeked about this. Costa Rica is meant to be absolutely magical. I cannot wait to visit the rainforest and be on the sacred land. We will be doing yoga. We'll do excursions. You'll have plenty of free time. And there'll be plenty of soulful work, self-examination, meditation, and really stepping into what it means to retreat and look inward and then go back to your life refreshed, renewed, and hopefully with your soul on fire. So if you want more details about that, go to my Facebook page again or go to the Citizen Yoga Studio Facebook page or just reach out. I'd be happy to chat with you about it. Okay, enough of that. Let's get talking and I will catch you on the end of this. Thanks again for listening and let's get to today's episode. Welcome. Welcome, Amanda. I am really grateful to have you here. I'm here today with Amanda Mossing from West Palm, Florida. Yeah, is that where you are?
You got it. Yep. West Palm Beach.
West Palm Beach. Weather's lovely, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a little chilly here. It's actually in the 50s this week, which is fun.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Have you always been in Florida?
I have not. I'm originally from Toledo, Ohio. But yeah, I've been down here since I've been 21. So 12 years, I think, recently is what I hit down here.
All right. Mm-hmm. So what do you do in Florida?
So I'm a therapist down here. I have a private practice as a licensed clinical social worker. I have my own practice and I wear many hats though within that. So within the state of Florida, that's what I do. But then, you know, beyond that, I'm also a mentor, a spiritual teacher, light worker. I've gone under that hat. Mm-hmm. You know, just a lot of many hats I wear, you know, with all the different practices. I'm also a yoga teacher. I've been teaching yoga for many years, both kids and adults. And Reiki, you know, energy healer. I mean, sure. pick which hat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So where did all of that start? What at 21 made you decide to leave the lovely land of Ohio to go to Florida?
Great question. Yeah, that was my cracking open. Little did I know at the time that put me smack on my spiritual path. So I had a deep, dark, nasty drug addiction up in Ohio, mm-hmm. and was a drug addict and lived that lifestyle for several years. And got to a number of bottoms, but the last bottom that I had was what catapulted me down here and landed me in a facility and intervened in my life. And mm-hmm. I wasn't at that point ready, or did I think I was gonna, you know, stay on that path or stay sober and live the lifestyle that way. But that's how things kind of turned out to be. And then and the path that I chose, and it's been that way ever since, and yeah. it's just continued to get better.
How did you get from addiction and in the throes of that to choosing to seek treatment? Had you done treatment before? When did it start?
I started like experimenting with substances when I was 15, 16 mm-hmm. years old, but it really, when I got my hands into other substances, it just like really brought me to my knees a lot faster yeah. than what I was like experimenting with early on. And that happened the first time around 20 was the first treatment center I landed in, and that was up in Ohio, and didn't stick with it. I ended up relapsing, and then 6 months later landed, had an interventionist come on in, and a lot of consequences, and then, you know, treatment down in Florida. So it was probably my third time trying to get sober. I think the very first time I tried on my own, and that lasted like 7 days.
Yeah.
And then the second time was treatment, and the third time was treatment, but an inpatient facility, like significant time yeah. away, completely out of my element.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one was like an outpatient facility. I was still in the scene, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. So was it mm-hmm. your parents who sent you there?
Yeah. My mom especially had a major impact on all that. I was living with her at the time. My parents are divorced. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had to get honest with my dad, honest with the major people around me, but my mom was really instrumental in all that. There was also a level of denial, like in the beginning, you know, sure. I think she knew something was wrong, but didn't know what or how. And like, that's the last thing that you want to think is going on with your kid. And it was yeah. so far from like how I was raised that it also just, you know, it's like, how could this be? So, but my mom intervened. She actually kicked me out of the house, which was huge because yeah. That was like the struggle, you know, mm-hmm. it was like some of the enabling, which makes sense. You don't want to see your kid go through that and cause more harm, but it's a very confusing thing. And so, yeah, she kicked me out and I went to stay with my dad. And the thing with my dad and mom is like, I knew I couldn't manipulate my dad quite like I could my mom. And he laid down the hammer and was like, if you do anything mm-hmm. to cross me, I will, you know, send you to jail. I will get someone else involved, you know, to deal yeah. with this. So that they have always worked really well, despite, you know, being separated for many, many years. When their kids, you know, are in some kind of crisis, they do amazing working together, you yeah. know, separate yeah. and together, you know, they have good teamwork. So they both saved my life, you know, they wow. both did, but I detoxed with my dad at his house for like a week. And then I had an interventionist come in orchestrated by my mom and people she was reaching out to. And he kind of did, yeah, came in, intervened, and then he's the one who flew down to Florida with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wow. Mm-hmm. So you said this wasn't how I was raised. How were you raised?
So raised, you know, when I think about my childhood, there was like turbulence, but there was so much love through the turbulence.
Yeah.
A lot of confusion. There is a lot of divorces. My parents got divorced when I was 7. And then it seemed from like 7 to, you know, all the way until I decided to get sober, there was just all this turbulence, you know, between the different family dynamics, the relationships my parents were in, a lot of confusion, a lot of uncertainty. There was death early on of a step parent, just a lot of movement nonstop,
yeah.
you know, just really no sense of, like stability, you
sure.
know, and parents, there was joint custody. So my brother and I would kind of bounce back and forth between mom and dad. So mm-hmm. just when I would get settled in one space, you know, it'd be time to go to the other house, you know? So there's really no, just when I'd start to lock in, I'd be asked to leave or change or move, you know? Sure. And that became the movement all over the place, became the certainty, became the stability, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think that was in part what led to addiction for you? What have you unearthed from your addiction now to understand how you fell into that?
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of moving parts to that. I think that there was a lot of things that I just didn't know and was unaware of, because when you're going through life, at least for me, when I was going through all those experiences, it was just kind of like, okay, well, this is what we're doing now. And this is what, like, I didn't know I had choices like I know today.
Right.
There was just so much that I didn't know. And it was just a lot about surviving it. And my mantra, if I could tell you my mantra at that time, it was probably something like, just got to get through it. Just got to get through it. Just got to get through it. Like, it was always about just keep moving, you know, which is great. But there's, you know, there's just a lot I didn't know. So it was very innocent how I moved through that. And then it wasn't like with the drugs and stuff where I was like, oh, it was more curiosity. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to sign me up to be a drug addict, you know?
Sure,
of
course not.
Right. It was, please give me a terrible life. You know, it was just innocently getting involved with the wrong people. Mm-hmm. But then like whatever I was connecting to in them and that lifestyle and the feelings, I felt a part of something.
Yeah.
And then with the drugs, it was more or less something that just kind of turned into a habit. And then you get the physical addiction, which is a whole another thing along with the mental. There's a whole big spiritual malady, I think, that was underneath it all.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was asking. Yeah.
Yeah. That was driving it 100%. But by the time I was into the behaviors of it, that was just to like function and cope and live and like deal with this internal dis-ease that was going on.
Yeah. Were you raised religious?
Yeah. Raised religious, Catholic. Mm-hmm. I went to private Catholic schools during, you know, grade school and junior high and private Catholic high school.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
The household wasn't, you know, my parents weren't very like strict. There was an acknowledgement that there was a God. There was, you know, we said our prayers, we went to church, you know, on Sundays, but there wasn't this, so I had this feeling of like, there's like good, bad, right, wrong, right? Like there's this thing that I have to like perform for. And if I don't do good enough, like, I'm going to a place I don't want to be, you know, and I'm bad.
Right.
So there was that feeling, but it wasn't like so strict in my household. My parents also gave us a lot of choice around that, I felt, but it was expected, you know, to go to the schools and, you know, we did do the church thing and I did all my sacraments, you know, and all that with Catholic religion.
Did you feel connected to it?
No, it was very confusing. It's kind of like I'm born, there's this dead guy on a cross and like somehow I did it. Right. It was like,
right. So very, it's my fault.
My fault. So like a lot of core beliefs that were just like transferred to me, you know, I think it just came generationally down through my family system. I think this is a collective thing. So that's just how I got the bug, you know?
Yeah.
And, it was really innocent how it was transferred, but you know, I never saw anyone question it, you know? So it's just kind of like, we're all kind of doing this thing that we're told to do because to be like good enough. And it didn't make a lot of sense. What I did feel connected to is praying to something. I also didn't like that I had to like pray these certain words and prayers. It felt very robotic. So again, with not knowing that I had like choices, and getting sober and like the rooms of recovery and the support that I leaned into on that path is really where like that breakthrough came, where I was really shown like, oh, you do have a choice. And this isn't like a punishing thing in the sky that's, you know, going to judge you at the end of your life and send you off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I mean, that was, for me, I always loved the feeling of church. Like I connected with the spiritual feeling and the feeling when everyone was singing and the beauty of the stained glass. And I have like really beautiful memories of that energetic space. But but the guy in the sky thing and like the logic was always flawed to me. And so, but you only know what you know, and that was all I was exposed to. So I felt the same way until, you know, I got old enough to go, oh, wait, there's more than one way to whatever, be spiritual. You know, it was like this like major epiphany for me because I knew it but nobody had ever validated it to me, you know? So it sounds like you had a similar.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I like the community too in the church. I like the singing together. I love the rituals. I liked those little things. They felt, you know, nice. Yeah.
So at 21, you end up in West Palm Beach, and you're at a recovery place. And was this a traditional recovery facility of sorts?
Yeah, it was traditional. They were 12-step based. It was an inpatient facility. I was there for 30 days. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. I was like right on the beach. Sure. It was like, you know, and like at that time I was like, I'll take it. I'll take it because, you know, again, at that time I didn't know that I was gonna like stay sober. It was just a matter of in the moment, I was like, get me out of Toledo because mm-hmm. I got a lot of heat on my back and I feel so guilt and shame ridden that like I need to go. So that was honestly what got me out. And then the real magic started to happen within the walls of like treatment and the exposure I had. And I think I was ready.
Yeah. I was going to say, it almost sounds to me just as like a complete outsider that it was like you were an accidental addict, you know, that you kind of just tripped and fell your way into these circumstances that led you to it. And by 21, you were over your head and didn't know how to get out. And then so what were the, I mean, so many people are in and out of treatment and don't find their way through it. What do you think it was that happened to you other than you saying you were ready, which I think of course is key, but tell us what that experience was like for you from a more spiritual perspective, I guess, or just whatever was real for you then.
Yeah. So what made me ready? Well, I think healthy fear, I guess, had a big place. Fear of like, I knew that my parents were so serious that like I was either going to end up homeless in Florida, which was so terrifying because I had never been like out of Toledo, Ohio, like really aside from like the vacations, right? Like, so the fact that I was like, had just like a bag full of stuff and like nothing and knew no one and had no resources. And I knew my family wouldn't let me back. And so it was like homeless here or homeless there. Like take your pick. These are your options. This is where this path has led you.
Yeah.
Right. And so it was a combination of that. And then being like in a living space with other, you know, however many, there's probably like 20 of us at this place in residential, kind of crammed together, and day in, day out for 30 days, you know, I was with this tribe of people who are all going through, you know, maybe different experiences, but we all the same feelings and all the same experience, you know, mm-hmm. feelings that got us to where we were.
Yeah.
So it was that combination. And then they were exposing us to, you know, like meetings, and they had meetings brought into us, like recovery meetings and 12-step meetings. And I remember the people that would come in to share their story. I can remember sitting there the first time they brought someone in to share their, you know, journey and, you know, kind of what it was like and how they got there and what life was like now. And it just like, I don't know, I let something in, you know, I can remember being like, oh, me too. Instead of like pushing against this way of life and saying, that's not me, I'm not like them, like the separation, it was, oh, I'm just like them. And, you know, they look different and maybe have different things that brought them here, but like, I feel the same exact way. And like, that was a lifeline. And like, I grabbed on. So then it became very day at a time, which is a big mantra they use in the program, you know, of recovery. And that was like hard to grasp at first, but I remember when I started grasping it and I started, you know, I was so desperate, but didn't even realize how desperate I was until I was like there. And then I started like putting the pieces together.
Yeah. It's fascinating because really it was your adolescence, and at 21, you're, you know, barely an adult in any way. Right. And so I just think of addiction that comes in so many ways. I mean, you had more stereotypical, what we shame, the shaming kind of addiction, but there's so many addictions that maybe fly under the radar that are more socially acceptable. And any way we do it, it's like we start numbing. So we, the collective, I guess, at least for me, you know, I started numbing around food, eating or not eating, a diet obsession, all of those things. And it was, I didn't even know what I was numbing, because at that point as a sensitive person, which I'm guessing probably you were too as a child and as a human being, I didn't even know what I was numbing, because I just spent my whole life trying to protect myself. Mm-hmm. And that was just my drug of choice. Luckily, I was very responsible. My brother had done all the drugs. He'd warned me against them. So, and I knew addiction was in our family. So it was like, I knew where the line stood for me, but food was such an easy way to escape and not manage myself or my energy and numbing. And again, I didn't even know what I was doing. So what I just heard you say, like, you didn't even, I was thinking about as I'm listening, it doesn't even sound like you knew exactly why you were numbed out other than just you needed to. And you created this habit from your, you know, teenage years.
Yeah. Connection, relief. That was like, that was what was filling, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So interesting. So you go through treatment and you come out the other side of that. Then what happens for you?
So I followed their suggestions. When I say they're the professionals in this treatment center, like, you know, but digging my heels in along the way, you know, like very like, hey, yeah, I know this is working for me. A lot of like big moments, a lot of aha moments, a lot of this, I'm on the right path, but still like, okay, but I'm done after 30 days, right? And then I can go back home. Like,
Yeah.
So it took a little bit. And, you know, I remember my interventionist having phone calls with me because I would get squirrely and like want to bolt. And I remember sitting down with therapists. I remember my mom came for a family weekend one time. Just a lot of like little conversations every time I'd get squirrely and want to bolt. And their suggestion was to keep going, you know, go to a halfway house. You know, follow the 12-step program, do the 12-step program, like follow all the suggestions they give you there, build a life, build a foundation, you know, to support yourself. Why would you go back to, you know, a place that has torn up tracks and try to do it there, right? Like, didn't you already try? And I was like, you know, like, but they get me every time they'd like counter what my thinking, they were right, you know? Yeah. So I would fight, but then I would give in. And so then after treatment, I did follow their suggestions, and went to a halfway house, an all women's halfway house for a year. I started out as a 3-month commitment. Again, like I'd make these little commitments and be like, kind of tell myself, okay, once you do this, then you can go back home. It was always like this, but then I would like get the time together and I'd be like, all right, just a little bit more. And like, that is literally how I put together time, was just kind of telling myself, like, we don't have to leave right now, but like get this much amount of time. And then like, we'll reevaluate. Maybe we can leave then.
Yeah.
And then it turned into like, a year of staying at this house. I rebuilt my life. I mean, I went from like not having a car or anything, like didn't know how to take any kind of bus system. I had to learn the bus system down here. My mom was not going to let me have my vehicle for, you know, until I had really proven that I could take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
And, so I just walked everywhere and I built a community of people. I had a little tribe. I was still doing treatment, but on an outpatient level for a little bit. And then like eventually I released that and then, you know, dove into the 12-step programs and did all the work there and the suggestions I was told. And then just like life really started happening. The halfway house really taught me how to like live again. Mm-hmm. You know, treatment got me like sober, and then like halfway really helped me develop a foundation to like stay sober.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Did you have an education before then at 21, or what were you doing?
Yeah. So I graduated and I was all over the place. I mean, when I graduated high school, I went to Bowling Green State University for a little bit, but I was on drugs and I tanked that semester, moved back home. No one really knew what was going on. They just thought it was like anxiety and depression and like from like a big life change, which
it was,
probably that too.
Yeah.
But then I moved back home for a bit and then registered and went to school at UT, University of Toledo, for a little bit and tanked there too. Completely destroyed my GPA. I mean, and this was a first. So that was a big red flag to everyone. And then stopped school because I just proved I couldn't tolerate it at that time. And then that's when all this kind of happened. So just like little classes here and there.
Yeah.
And then when I put together like, you know, a nice life down here is when I went back to school.
Got it. And you got your MSW?
Yeah. Got my, went to grad school. Yep.
Awesome. So how did all of this traditional therapy and traditional, you know, stepping systems and all of that turn into more spiritual practices? I mean, now you're yoga, spiritual teacher, light worker, Reiki. Like, how did you bridge? when did that happen? How did that happen for you?
Yeah. So what I'll say is like the purpose of like, you know, the 12 steps for me is to kind of bridge that connection with a higher power, right? And then live under that of my, you know, understanding. I like to say misunderstanding because I still don't understand what it is. And the minute I start to think I do, I'm boxing something in. But that was like huge. And one of the steps in the 12 steps is the 11th step, and it talks about using prayer and meditation as a means to maintain this constant contact with a higher power, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been through the steps a number of times, but with that particular step suggestion, I had really only worked the prayer piece.
Yeah.
And which is great, and it had gotten me so far, but I had hit a point in my recovery around 3 years, 3 years in sobriety, where I was just, I had another, like more of an emotional bottom, mm-hmm. you know, I was a chronic doer. So talk about other, you know, behavioral addictions.
Yeah.
That was my first one was overdoing. It's mm-hmm. what I watched my parents do. It's how I saw them get their, you know, that's how their self-esteem was built on from what I could see, that where their worthiness was tethered to, that's sure. how they accomplished things, so on and so forth. So that was like, that's how I felt good enough, right, in our world, was if I was constantly doing. So
yeah.
I had my hands in like a bucket of different things as far as jobs and like where I was headed and getting into school. And I had like hit this bottom with my higher power. I was very suicidal. I had like a big identity break, didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I remember like trying to listen to people's story to see like, where does this happen? Where, yeah. you know, I thought it was supposed to get better, you know, now, like, I don't want to stay sober or use drugs because they both sound awful.
Yeah.
So, that was a big cracking open. And I remember I was working with a woman at the time and I realized that I was not using this meditation piece that had been so strongly suggested, mm-hmm. but I was terrified of it because why? That would mean I'd have to sit still.
Yeah.
Right.
With
and
myself.
Terrified me. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
But I was ready. So that was really the cracking open mm-hmm. point for me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember her taking me on her dock on the Intercoastal and like just telling me like I really had these expectations with meditation that it meant I need to go sit on a mountain somewhere. It needs to be so freaking perfect so that I can do it. And like, you know, there's always yeah. expectations and perfection and high standards. So I just wouldn't do it because I wouldn't let myself really.
Yeah.
So when this woman showed me like, oh, it doesn't have to look like that. Like you could just sit here and just breathe and like focus on the waves and the water moving, you know, and she mm-hmm. showed me there was other ways than what my mind was kind of strapping me down to. That was huge, you know,
yeah.
and then it became a practice from them. It didn't stick and stay all at once, but there was a cracking open and then I just kept feeling called back to it. Mm-hmm. So at that point, then I started to, then because of that opening I had allowed, then all the different practices kind of in line with that started to flood in little by little
yeah.
over time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was next?
Yeah, a lot of back and forth with meditation. It mm-hmm. was really hard to turn it into an actual daily practice. It's been daily for a really long time now at this point. And next came yoga. It was during the same time where I was like doing all these things at once and I was still chronically doing, but I was seeking at the same time and the changeover was starting to happen. And I was nannying for a family, going to school. And the father of the family I was nanning for said, hey, why don't you try yoga? And again, here I am digging my heels in, thinking that I'm better than, don't you know who I am? I'm a basketball, I'm an athlete. And that's what I did right. in high school. So I'm like, yoga yeah. is for like sissies. Like, that's not for me.
Yep.
And he's like, oh,
leotards.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, why don't you give it a try? And I went to my first class and fell in love, like just
yeah.
dove right in. And that was another, you know, breakthrough. And then that became a practice in itself.
Yeah. So funny. Yeah. I started yoga. I was nannying
yeah.
my way through college.
Cool.
And the wife and husband both started practicing. and they took me to my first class and I felt the same way. I knew I wanted to do it, but I think my, athletic self and perfectionist self was concerned about, you know, how everyone feels, that everyone's going to look at them on the mat
yes.
and they're going to be the asshole standing out that doesn't know what they're doing. And I was afraid of all of those things too, but that's really funny. And I knew for sure, same as you did, that like, oh, this is a piece, like this is a missing piece that I've needed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The spirituality was now grounded in my body and I could do it in a way that didn't feel like, I don't know, other or outside of me. So
100%. Yeah. I love yeah. the microcosm of you that shows up on your mat, you know,
yeah.
and all the different mirrors that happen. I mean, it's just so, it's so therapeutic. So
yeah.
not to mention what it does for the body. And, you know, at that time I needed to connect to that. There was such a disconnect. I was mm-hmm. a floating head, so to speak, you know,
yeah.
at that time.
I think that's the, I think that's the culture we're living in, and that people don't even realize that. It's like we're so disembodied and we are floating heads and we're stuck in this beta frequency of mind.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. And that's what I've realized this last year. That's, you know, I'm like, gosh, how old am I? I'm 39. Uh-huh. I started practice at 21. So nice. 18 years into my practice. And I realized that embodiment is really what it offered me.
Yeah.
You know, to like take my spiritual self and put my spiritual self actually in my body without being at war with it anymore.
Yes.
And yeah. Yeah. And that is why so many people need it. It's like we think it's about one more way to be physical. And it's really to get all of, I love the floating head. I'm going to start using that.
Yeah.
Like to stop being a floating head where you're just like walking around with this vehicle that you're so disconnected from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Such an empowering practice. Embodiment is a beautiful word. It's done that for me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because addiction, I would imagine, I mean, at least any addiction is just a disconnection from that experience of being in our bodies.
Yeah.
And I love, I mean, that's, I feel like people replace it all the time. And you were so clear that you went from, you know, drug addiction to a doing addiction, which is just keeping yourself so busy and doing all the right things in order to manage yourself, I guess. Or what do you feel like you, what was the, it, why did you feel like you had to do?
It was a numbing out, but the doing was so wrapped up in, what you think of me. It was wrapped up in, yeah, like I can feel good. I would get, it would be the platform. I would give myself permission to feel good enough. But it was just this not, it was never enough, right? Because this was something external and what I was looking for needed to be internal, right? So it was just a constant, every time I'd feel it, I just need more, just like the drugs and alcohol, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think people think, well, I'm not like Amanda because I didn't get drug addicted. And I just call such BS and all of that. Like, you know, that like I said, so many of us, all of us, in one way or another, whether it's your smartphone or your exercise plan or your diet plan or your money, your bank account, your stock portfolio, like you can find it anywhere you want to just disconnect and continue to be that floating head. And I think this is what we're all calling this awakening that's happening in the shift to higher consciousness is really looking inward at the ways in which we each on our own individual experience numb out and disconnect. And the call is to do more and why we're all so depressed and anxious, not that we don't have trauma and wounding and all these other real issues that we've handled as human beings, but a huge piece of it too, I think, is just this disconnect. And we don't know how to bridge that gap because nobody's taught us,
right?
You know, that exactly. religion.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. It's so. And then the religion that was there, maybe like where people were reaching for, like it just kind of showed up there too, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it put us outside of ourselves again.
Yeah.
That somebody else knows better than I know for myself.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got your degree and you started breaking open into all of these spiritual practices. And now you do, I mean, from what I hear, right, you're pretty intuitive and you do a lot of work like that. So how did that unravel for you? I think a lot of people feel like they know they're more intuitive than they're allowing in. They probably are afraid of meditation too, because I now am sort of sneaking it into more and more yoga classes.
Beautiful.
Because I was afraid of it too for the same reason, not because I didn't know how to sit with myself, maybe at the front end, but I didn't value it. I was like, I'm just going to sit here and think and be bored and agitated and wait for it to be over.
Yep.
I didn't understand how much better I'd feel. Well, it's sort of like yoga, right? Like the yoga buzz, but that you can do that sitting.
Yeah. You know?
It's pretty magical, right?
Yep.
So what did that look like for you? Meditation started in little ways, and at what point did you become more dedicated to that, I guess?
Well, I want to say that it started when I was in this very significant relationship that ended up being like another awakening in my life. And things just started coming down the pipeline because I was open for it. So I remember I changed everything. I wanted everything to be in line with kind of like what I was seeking. So like I started all the dietary changes and went, you know, to being a vegan, and that felt really correct at the time. And then the meditation started in little by little, not all at once. It was still very scary. I felt very safe doing it in yoga. I would do little blips by myself, what I could tolerate, but I felt much better when I was with people doing it.
Yeah.
And so during this time, like, because of the nature of this relationship, you know, he had kind of turned me on to meditation, and then things started to get really dark in the relationship. So I remember starting reaching for it myself. And at this time I got introduced to, so Course in Miracles was introduced to me, and I was not open to it. I mean, it literally kept following me until I finally surrendered and did it. But it was one of those things where I'd go somewhere and like literally jump off the bookshelf, like into my lap, and I'd be like, oh, hell no, you know, and put it, I'd look at the language in it and I'd like put it back in the shelf.
Yeah.
So it was really intimidating. I had a lot of deconstructing around the thoughts and beliefs and paradigms around the language and what it meant to me that had to be, you know, worked through first. But then I jumped into a group and I had a teacher and I did the course. At the same time, Marianne Williamson, Gabby Bernstein. So Gabby Bernstein has been a big mentor, you know, on my spiritual path, and have done all of her stuff. I've done her, you know, part of one of my offerings. It's through my mentorship, and it's been like doing her Spirit Junkie Masterclass. So a lot of her stuff that I really took advantage of was also like gave me the safety to like, it really, it made meditation cool. You know, it made it safe. It made it cool. So like all these different teachers introduced that were like my age or had walked my path. Like it just made it really okay to like do it and like let it be like imperfect as I was learning how to do it. So like that was really big. And then I just continued to layer on from there. And then before I knew it, I was like, I need to start teaching this. I need to start teaching this. Like I was in school. I knew where I was going with it. I knew I wanted to work with people and help people heal and like connect to themselves. That was like clear. But while I was like in school, I was like, I need to be funneling this now, you know? And so then I started running meditation, little meditation groups for people. And that's where, so I don't know if you've seen my Instagram handle, but it's called Soul Feather. And that's where Soul Feather was birthed is, and to me, so Soul Feather came because, I mean, at the time, like I was really getting in touch with the angelic realm. I was really getting in touch with a lot of metaphysical stuff. I was putting all this stuff into practice, really getting in touch with my intuition and just like the magic of it all. And feathers were a big symbol for me that like, for like a wink from the universe, like, hey, you're supported. Keep going. Hey, we got you. Hey, like the numbers in 1111, all that was like really loud at that time for me. And like all the validation I needed to say, keep going. And so feather was a big thing. And then one day I was laying in bed and like the name just popped into my head and I knew like I needed to do something with it. And so I like started a business with it and knew that I somehow was going to run yoga under it. But then these meditation groups started and I just would start offering them and people would just come and I would teach them little basic things, how to meditate. And I was literally still learning myself, but I knew that I had to be this like channel and like to teach is to learn. So I had to like, it taught me so much more as I was teaching this. So that was, a lot of how that really started to take root was through all that.
So, back up one second and then I want to go forward again, but, so you talked about Course in Miracles and the language. Is that because the language felt Christian to you or like the God with a capital G, or what was it about the language that was off-putting?
Yeah. The word, so, Holy Spirit, Jesus, our son, Christ, like, I'm just like, what, like it, like, even now, like my body does a little cringy thing
because it has
It has something associated with it, and I'm still like kind of trying to change that. But I, like now I can look past it and read the material and like see it. But yeah, there was, I remember my teacher before she led our group through the course, she had us read Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox, and that knocked everything away. And then I just removed this resentment I had against Jesus and like formed a whole new relationship with him of my, you know, understanding that wasn't what I grew up with. And, you know, he and I are like bros today, but
so tell me about that, because I, you know, it's interesting being a parent and working to not, you know, I don't want to make my child, an atheist, obviously, because that's not at all who we are, but also trying to raise a child with free of religion and all of the baggage I have with it, all of the weight of it. And so, you know, we'll drive by churches and she'll be like, well, what's that? You know? And I'm like, okay. Or like, even like Christmas, we celebrate Christmas, but not necessarily for the same reasons, but I've had to really try to make peace and not hand her down my baggage around, Jesus, you know? And, it's, I would love to hear what you, how you've, you know, turned him into your bro. I jokingly, you know, call him like, you know, he's just basically like a spiritual hipster, you know, and that, you know, that he's misunderstood, and that I've really, in the last few years, made some peace around that myself. I would love to tell you that I'm totally free of it, and I would love to tell you that I've read The Course in Miracles full throttle, but I can't for the same reasons, because yep. I contract. I can feel the contraction, and it's lessening. I feel like I'm really stepping into a different place with it, but I would love to hear how you went from, you know, your position of baggage to Jesus is my bro.
Yeah, right. And I even call him Jay. Like, he showed, yeah. like, that's the name I have for him today. But I say too. Jesus, right? It's Jay. And like, when I see him, he is such a relaxed, like, he's on my spirit team with yeah. a bunch of them. And when I see him, I mean, when he first started presenting to me in my meditations and like visually, it would be him sitting in a chair sideways in the chair. Like, mm-hmm. like, he's just like a rebel, right? Like,
yeah.
he's like, don't put me in your boxes. Don't yeah. put me in the boxes that you've been raised with. I'm not yeah. that. Form your yeah. own opinion. And I'm like, whoa.
I get chills when you say that. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I can do that. Yeah, you can do that. Like, you've mm-hmm. just been taught you can't, you know, mm-hmm. you've believed it this whole time, but like, let's like knock that out. So it started with that, but then one, I just had to be open. So I think that the Sermon on the Mount cracked something open. Working with the teacher I worked with on the course cracked something open. Seeing other people like shift their perspectives around the language and like religion and like mm-hmm. Jesus, like that helped. Then my very good friend and also paranormal, you know, medium, intuitive friend, he works a lot with crossing over spirits in like the paranormal world. Mm-hmm. And he is really connected to Jesus. And somehow or another, I realized that he was doing like some paranormal stuff and basically like crossing spirits over and like helping them and like yeah. helping our planet. Right. And mm-hmm. I like linked up with him and I'm like, so like asking people about their like connections with Jesus. Right. Yeah. Like, so all this was like food and like proof that like I could form my own relationship with yeah. him that yeah. was like good for me and felt good and right and safe, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was just a lot of experiences where people were showing me their, like how they operated in that. And then yeah. like, I've taken pieces from it. Right. But then like within all that developed my own.
Sure. How long did it take in your meditation practice to get to such an intuitive space with it? Like, how did that unravel for you? Because I think some people probably just meditate just to feel less stress and less calm, and it's not yeah. metaphysical, and they don't really want it to be metaphysical. But I would love to know how that unfolded for you, you know, because it's not like you just dropped in and all of a sudden J-Dog was sitting in his chair sideways talking
no,
to you.
Right. Right. No. It took a lot of like coming back and sitting. And like, I'll tell you, there was just like, I don't know, like years of just, because it took me a while to be okay to drop in, you yeah. know, like my mind just would not let me. It was just like a spinning top that would just spin for like so long before mm-hmm. it tired out and conked over. So it was just kind of knowing that I had to get through that, but like the more and more I subjected myself to it, the calmer my nervous system would get and the more trusting I'd build within myself. Mm-hmm. And so it was a lot of the body and mind stuff to work with first, but a lot of practice. It was a lot of coming back and then again, connecting with people, like talking to people, having conversations. And then the stuff just started showing up because I was just willing to let it, you know, mm-hmm. because people like said that they were having these experiences. So it gave some kind of permission, you know, to like lift the veil a little yeah. bit, you know, cause I think we all can do it. It's yeah. just, you know, cause there's just like so many different ways to be intuitive. You know, for me, sure. it's very, very visual. You know, I get very detailed visions. I mean, my meditations at this point are like, I'm like getting stuff accomplished in there, you know, yeah. like I have yeah. like tasks to do, but for other people, and like, it is relaxing. Also, there is that payoff. Mm-hmm. And, but it's very, it's like, I'm like going into other dimensions and doing, getting stuff done and activating certain things and connecting, you know, in all these different ways. Whereas yeah. early on, it was all about, I got to calm the nervous system. I got to rewire, you know, yeah. and deprogram and like,
yeah.
look at the thoughts that are keeping me, you know, stuck and trapped and, you know, kind of in a state of victimization.
Mm-hmm. So when you go into these different realms and places and, you know, travel or journey or whatever it is you call it, is it yeah. for you? Is it for your own healing? Is it for the healing of others? Do you do that as part of your work? I mean, obviously not under the umbrella of the clinical therapist, but
yeah.
do you have a practice where you do healing with other people or?
Yeah. Yep. That's my mentorship. That's my Soul Feather mentorship, where it's really about, I mean, all my work in essence, like, and my mission here is to help people heal and attune to the inner voice. Mm-hmm. And so whatever hat they want to do that in with me is where there's a lot of like freedom and choice. But for me, like, that's like my heart and soul. It's my like mentorships and my mentees and like teaching people how to be their own healer and hold the space and really the modalities to, you know, attune to their own inner voice and, empower them. You know, that's like a big piece of how I work with people. It's empowering. It's very spiritual in nature. And it's just a combination of everything I've, a lot of my like professional experience and what I've learned, but a lot of it's personal, you know, my personal experience as well. So yeah, that's how I operate from. And it's really like meeting each person where they are, just like I've had to do with myself. So like every person I sit down with, it's like I'm sitting with a version of myself and, I'm able to see that mirror and, they're just as much of a teacher as I am, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And yeah. And it just depends on kind of what their intentions are, what their goals are when, you know, and a lot of people are coming to me wanting to start to tap into this, you know? And so that's why I did develop the mentorship is because, yeah, it didn't really seem like the traditional therapy. I wouldn't call myself a traditional therapist anyway, what I do in that lane, but yeah, with this, it's about getting them connected, you know, and getting them in their body and like bridging, you know, making the bridge between the head and the heart and heart coherence and expansion and like deprogramming, you know, and then having them step into like what is theirs to step into the empowerment, you know, so creating self-sovereignty, giving them the ability to have discernment, you know, with their thoughts, you know?
Yeah.
That's the root of a lot of what I've seen is like, it's the thoughts that are the, you know, really behind the scenes dictating a lot of the stuff. And that's where all that programming comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. You're like speaking my love language there. How do we get out of our heads and into our hearts and create coherence and listen to our inner voice and live from that space and expand our awareness and consciousness. And I feel like, so that word light worker, I just think we're all here to kind of keep helping people at different angles, at least those of us who feel called to that work. Some people are very hands-on, it's Reiki, it's healing the body, and others, it's just empowering other people to trust that they actually can do this themselves and that they are worthy of it and that they deserve it, and that in that comes all this healing. I think what you're doing is really beautiful. So what do you feel like is the purpose of being a human being on earth?
To learn is the first thing. To learn, to be able to embody like this spiritual experience in the human body, you know, and work with all the density on our planet. But I also think like a very big part of like to help people. I think the healing part is like all the stripping down of what you're not, what, you know, and then stepping into what you are and doing it through this human body.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some kind of like learning thing with that, that's serving some like overall good that like, I can't put into words, but I feel like once I'm out of here, I'll know again. Yeah. I'll be like, oh, that's right. We signed up for that because we're doing this thing, you know? Yeah. And it's collective for sure. You know, it's unity, you know, it's love. I think it's all of that. It's so many words. And I think with all the different words, you're kind of describing the same thing even, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, the lessons that you learn on earth as a soul, do you think that you have, has it been your experience that you feel people know to some extent what they came here in to learn and what they would face as obstacles? Do you have any impression about that? Is that like, how do I want to say that? I think so many times in this spiritual conversation, at least with people who are in the world of mediumship and similar lanes that you're in, this idea of knowing what your soul signed up for and then remembering it. And then part of that is also some of the challenges you face as well as some of the joys and highs. Do you have any feedback or thoughts around that?
So some like pre-incarnate planning, like blueprints. Yeah. I do believe in that. So I think at the end of the day, a lot of these things are just like, you know, systems to hop, they're portals essentially to just hop into. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, learning to go to the portals that make you feel good and align with your vibration is the golden ticket, you know? And mm-hmm. so, and that's where also the empowerment and discernment lies. So it's not about right or wrong. Right. It's about what it's a vibrational thing. So with that question, yeah, I've had a lot of experience where I've been pre-incarnate with certain individuals, like that relationship I told you where all this stuff really started flooding in, where it was a very awakening relationship. It was very dark as well, but hands down biggest teacher I've ever been with. And I remember after that relationship, I dove with both feet into a lot of this work mm-hmm. as well. And that is also where I really took off. But I remember having a specific vision with this man before we incarnated as humans. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were looking on a table. What I was shown is we were looking on a table. There was like a blueprint of our paths. And we had done this before, he and mm-hmm. I, like this relationship felt very karmic. And this is like our last, like,
hurrah.
Yeah. And, but deep, deep, deep learning. Yeah. So we were looking at the paths and he specifically said to me, you know, I'm going to hurt you really bad. I'm really going to hurt you in this life. And I was like, I don't care because I need it. So it was like this knowing. Yeah. And when I had that visualization, when I had that, it was like a game changer. All the anger left my body for this person and like what had happened between us and the human form. And there was acceptance. And there was still a lot of work to do after that, but it was like a game changer. Yeah. So, you know, then I go back to like, is it real? Is it not real? I don't really care at this point because I know how it felt and what it did to my whole body viscerally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that spoke volume. So, you know, to each their own when it comes to like what you wanna believe or not believe, you know.
Yeah, for me it's a posture of empowerment, and I don't think everyone can have that experience. But for me to think like whatever the hardship is that I'm going through at any given time, or that even mostly from my own perspective, I think it's hard to place that on someone else. But that for me to say like this is on purpose and this is a opportunity to not on purpose, I guess, but this is on path in some ways, and that this is a spiritual lesson, and that growth comes from this. It's like the only way I can muster the ability to keep walking into discomfort and not bailing. Mm. Mm-hmm. And if I can choose the posture of belief that there is some order, or that my higher self has placed this in my path so that I can move through it to gain more skills, knowledge, growth, whatever it is that I need. I don't. For me, that feels more empowering, you know,
than
feeling that it's all random and it's futile and it's miserable. And I'm not. And I'm very much someone who's like, listen, suffering is real, and people like, I don't think it's all bliss and love, nor do I think it's meant to be that. And if that's your position, that's okay. It just doesn't work for me. I need to know, sometimes it hurts and it sucks and it's shitty and it's very human and dense feeling mm-hmm. and like, keep going, you know, there's something in that for you, including just like your experience with that relationship, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Higher self is coordinating it all, you know? Yeah. And like, you know, there's a way to say that and like, have it be empowering. And there's also a way to say that and like, let it be bypassing, you know? So just because like we believe these things, it doesn't mean we say them and we believe them, but we ignore like what's coming up along the way. Like there's a way to work with that and honor the feelings along the way. It doesn't mean that like stuff can't still be hard, you know, or challenging.
Absolutely. And I don't even mean at all that, like, oh, it's all divine order. Like, I think that's also BS. So biggest lessons you've learned in your meditations from angels or from traveling, or what are the biggest things that you've taken back that have shifted your perspective or the way you see the world?
Wow. That's loaded. Well, that I'm supported.
Yeah.
A lot of my work has been about creating this inner safety and not from like lean, like really like realizing, you know, I have it all within.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been I've been programmed, you know, and that it's the opposite. And I think all of us have. I think that's what we're all recovering from is that thinking, you know, I think on the outside world is an echo of the inside, but I think we've been programmed that it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. And so that creates a lot of like grounds for codependency and like confusion and like giving our power away and like corruption. And so for me, this like power to like go in and like see all the things that I'm seeing is like debunking all that and showing me how safe I really am within myself. And then what has started to happen because of that is like the things on the outside are just an echo and a valid, more validation of that, if that yeah. makes sense. So that's been a big piece. And then like how supported I really am. I mean, the team that is available to me. I mean, when I first started this, I was like, oh, I have angels and like guardian angels. And then when I like really like a lot of my intuitive abilities started really kicking on, the clairs started turning on, I really saw like who was on this freaking spirit team of mine. And it is just yeah. like endless and big, and they are so cool and they are so creative, and the ways they show up for me and the things we accomplish, it just feels like I'm a superhero, like, yeah. you know, and how they present to me, and then how they like, how it shows up in the physical, you mm-hmm. know, that echo I'm talking about. It's just, it's amazing, you know? So, mm-hmm. so I think the biggest lesson is just like how safe and truly supported I really am, and how it is okay to keep trusting in the uncertainty
yeah.
and the unknown and all of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So to circle back, what do you think the relationship is between addiction and spirituality, or lack of spirituality? Do you see any link there personally in your life or in the world or the people you work with?
Yeah. I mean, I think that this feeling that I get from my practices that I've developed and like the spirituality that I'm standing on today and the abilities I have today to like go within, that is what I was trying to do with the drugs. I mean, even like the specific drug of choice that like really brought me to my knees, that I was really hooked on was like opioids. And that substance in itself, like the feeling it gave me was like a kind of like a powerful, yet everything's calm yeah. inside feeling.
Yeah.
And so that is what I've replicated in what I'm doing now, except yeah. it feels way more powerful because I'm not leaning on this outside thing to keep filling up on mm-hmm. to get my power from, right?
Yeah.
This is my own power I've tapped into, and I don't have to take anything from the outside and bring it in. Mm-hmm. It's more of I'm taking things from the inside and bringing it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's way different, and it's everlasting, and it's incredibly empowering.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It does seem to me just that this hunger, right? Like the what are you hungry for? And that so often what we're choosing to fill ourselves with is not ever going to satiate the hunger we feel. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, at least personally, that it's ultimately tapping into some sort of spiritual connection or work that is going to start to satiate that hunger to some extent. And also that the void, whatever people want to call that, you know, that space that you can find sometimes isn't inherently bad. We've just been taught that it's bad, right? And that we're just uncomfortable yeah. being with ourselves in that sort of nothingness space, which I think is part of why people won't meditate, because I think they're just supposed to contemplate the void and it's going to be nothing. And that has not been my experience, though I'm still in the space. I need more time, because I definitely, there are many days that my brain will not allow me the fullness of surrender, and there's no yeah. rhyme or reason, you know?
And that's okay. Yeah. That's such a part of it. That was a big yeah. part of my journey. And not so like, and the work right there was not shaming myself for yeah. it. Cause that was the pattern I'd go into, is I'd beat myself up because I thought I needed to be what I was seeing on the outside world and what people were doing with their yeah. meditation practice, you know? So yeah. it was a lot of, okay, can I just be with the fact that my mind is racing and there's a reason for that, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that my whole team of spiritual helpers haven't shown up. And that for some people that may never happen in their practice, but it doesn't yep. mean that there's not great gifts held within it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So any last thoughts, or you want to talk about your mission or your word for 2020, or any of those sort of pieces that, you know, why you feel you're here, or reminders for the rest of us?
Yeah. I mean, the word presence comes to mind. That's like such a big part of my like practice too, is like the presence, having mm-hmm. presence within and, you know, also without, you know, is what yeah. I feel called to say in this moment. And yeah, attuning to the inner voice is so big. It's like when I came up with that statement, it was actually, inspired by when I had my chart read by Carly, who I know you've had yeah. on the show. She's a good friend of mine. But that came forward, and that's been like a big mantra. And I think that's going to kind of carry through the rest of my lifetime. And like, that's feels like it's, I was on a billboard when I first heard it. I was like, yeah. Oh, that's like what I'm supposed to do. You know, it's, yeah. It's healing, and it's helping people tune to this because of like the power it brings, you know? So yeah, yeah. That and presence, these are the things I'm here to teach.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this was great. I'm so happy to connect with you in this way. And thank you for so candidly sharing your story. I was thinking as you were talking about being in that, you know, circle at your addiction treatment and people telling their stories and you latching on or grabbing hold of that. I mean, to me, that is exactly why I started this podcast, is that I think there's so much power in seeing yourself in someone else's story and that you're not alone. And that if we can witness how somebody else sort of followed their path, maybe we can see ours a little more clearly. So I appreciate everything you're doing in the world. You know, it's why I also called it becoming, though I keep thinking about changing it just a little, but, that it's just this unraveling, you know, of all the programming and all of the beliefs and all of the things that were never yours to carry, and figuring out what's underneath that. So sounds like we have similar missions here, lady.
Yeah. Oh, we're doing it together. Yeah. Thank you so much. This is such an honor to be here. I'm so grateful. I really appreciate you.
Awesome. I'll start following you more and keeping up with what you're doing. So thank you for sharing your time and energy and your light.
Yay. Thank you. You're welcome.
Woo. Thank you for making it to the end of that. I appreciate you listening all the way through to any of these episodes. As a reminder, if you're enjoying this podcast, I am honored if you like it, subscribe to it, rate it, comment on it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I'd be deeply honored by that. Also, if you want to join the community we've built, it's called the Becoming Community on Facebook, and just ask for an invite. And it's just a community space that we can talk, share inspiration, tell the truth, be ourselves, show up. So I'd love to have you in there. If you're looking to connect with me, I am Ann Fancy on pretty much any social media platform. And of course, I would love if you checked out my website where you can find out more of the events and things I'm doing. Again, this Saturday locally at Ferndale, Class in a Glass, 10 a.m. and a wellness expo at 11 a.m. in Ferndale. 125, I'm teaching an extended Ashtanga primary series. So if you're into more traditional yoga or just curious about the roots of yoga, the roots of the vinyasa practice, really, then come check that out. That will be Saturday the 25th at 9:45. It'll be a couple hour practice. And it's super playful, super fun, super goofy. There's ridiculous postures in it. And we just try to have a good time and move through it. I'm by no means, I know this is going to be shocking, but I am by no means a purist when it comes to this. But I think the heart of Ashtanga is beautiful, and it's really where my practice developed and grew, and my love of yoga grew from. Also, if you're still with me and listening, you should really, really, really consider Costa Rica. It's May 9th to the 16th. 2020, we will be staying at the Bodhi Tree Resort, Yoga Resort. The pictures are absolutely breathtaking. You can walk to the ocean. You're literally in the trees of the rainforest. I'm going to be hanging out with monkeys and sloths. And by hanging out, I mean looking at them from afar and sending them love and light. But in my heart, I'll be with them. And I'm just really looking forward to it. From what I hear from all of my favorite people that have been there and my favorite teachers like Lori, that the land is really sacred and really soulful and magical in its own way. And I am just looking forward to connecting with that part of the earth. I'm looking forward to connecting with those who feel called to show up. I think it's going to be really important and pivotal for me personally, and hopefully for you too. So if that's something that's calling and to your heart, reach out to me. Go to the citizenyogastudio.com website and look for experiences, or just, you know, connect with me in one way or another and let's talk about it. I'm really, really geeked about that. And lastly, if you're still listening, I am also teaching partner yoga in Royal Oak, Michigan, if you're local. on Valentine's Day. So it's super playful, super silly. It's intimate in its own way, but it's not inappropriate in any way. And you can come with someone you love. Does not need to be your significant other, though there will be portions that are intimate in nature of closeness and silliness. So that has limited space. There's only 20 couples able to come. So if you're interested, sign up soon. And last, all of the announcements of things I'm engaged with. In April, I'm teaching a teacher training module on messaging, on how to teach soulful impact in your classes, on being a more impactful yoga teacher, and really just learning how to step into your power, into your passion, into your light, and serve the world, which is what I hope we're all doing in our own little corner, our own pocket of the world. Thank you for listening. And I am just extending so much gratitude and love to each of you. So thanks for showing up.